We're approaching the 50th anniversary of one of the darkest days in American history, November 22nd, 1963, Dallas, Texas, where the president was gunned down in the streets. And if you were alive then, even if you weren't, you have to wonder, what would our country have been if that had not happened, if Kennedy had survived the attack? You know, you look around and it's hard to find anyone who still believes that Lee Harvey Oswald acted as a lone gunman. There are various possible culprits that are mentioned in various conspiracy theories about who might have been involved. A lot of folks, a lot of evidence suggests that it was a coup, that it was, in essence, a takeover of the government. And a lot of things changed with Kennedy's death. A lot of our country changed. You won't have to wonder what would have happened to the Vietnam conflict, what would have happened to the buildup of a military-industrial complex and the power that it's taken and assumed in our country. Bryce Zabel, you know him as a producer of five primetime network series, most notably NBC's Dark Skies, a program, was a wonderful show that covered a lot of the topics that we talk about in this program, has written a new book that explores the what-ifs about John F. Kennedy and his life, had he survived, how our country might be different, how his presidency might have changed. When we come back, we jump right into the thick of things. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Our thanks again to Dave Politis here to talk about his books, Missing 411, North America and Beyond. Hope you check those out. We shift gears now to our second guest, Bryce Zabel. As I mentioned, he's created five different primetime series. He's a producer. He's an author. He's is produced documentaries. He's a man of many talents, and included in his vast resume, he was elected chairman CEO of the Academy of Television Arts along the way. And Bryce, I don't know how you have time to do all this stuff.
Well, that was a while ago. The nice thing about it is I get to go to the Emmys every year, and they were wonderful this year, as always, at least from the audience. Maybe not watching them from TV, but they were great in the audience.
I want to jump into Surrounded by Enemies, your new book about the JFK assassination, but let's talk about the Emmy Awards for a second.
Sure.
Millions of people watched the finale of Breaking Bad tonight, and I hope some of those have finally recovered from the program, and I hope none of them tell me what happened because I haven't seen it yet, but I hope they're now tuned into this program. You went to the ceremony this year, and it was awarded the best drama series.
Yes.
Just want to know if you have any thoughts about, is this sort of a golden age of series TV? I think about programs like Dexter and Breaking Bad and, you know, some of the stuff that's on HBO, some weird programs like Bates Motel, The Walking Dead, stuff that television would never have tackled before. They're really stretching the boundaries about who could be the protagonist. Doesn't have to be a good guy anymore. And it just seems like audiences are hungry for something different like that.
Well, I think this is the golden age of television, particularly for dramatic one-hour television. It most definitely is, because, as you point out, there's more avenues for these programs than ever before in our 500-channel universe. They're all over the dial, and they're also giving writers the chance to tell wonderful, complex, detailed, nuanced stories, which is terrific. And that is new, and that is wonderful, and I think partly it's because the feature film business has concentrated so much on the spectacle blockbuster that they've sort of ceded the territory of just, you know, powerful good writing and telling a canvas, a story on a large canvas, such as these hour dramas can do. I mean, Breaking Bad tonight, I won't spoil anything for anyone because I don't want anyone spoiling my book. So
I'll cut you off. We'll cut you right off.
Yeah. I mean, but it was a successful series because it told these wonderful stories, and it was a successful conclusion tonight because it was satisfying. It was definitive. It was respectful of its characters and its story, and it really stood out, I thought, favorably compared to some of the other high profile series ends we've seen recently. Lost, obviously, lost a lot of its viewers with its ending, and The Sopranos was notoriously unsatisfying to a lot of its own fans and viewers. But Breaking Bad, I'm sure when you see it, you'll like it. I think overall it's going to be something that people will remember as possibly some people think it's the greatest series of all time. I think it's certainly in the top 10 and maybe in the top 5, and I've loved every minute of it.
I think of your series, Dark Skies, maybe it was ahead of its time. Maybe now is its time, because it was complicated. You had to pay attention, you know. It was not formulaic, and maybe it was just too early for something like that.
Well, it was definitely too early in one respect, in that today people are able to sort of binge view these complex stories.
Yes.
And watch them in their own time and space. And also, when Dark Skies was on, we weren't all recording on a DVR. Dark Skies was on a Saturday night in the pre-DVR period. And literally, I don't know anyone on Saturday night that tries to stay home to watch TV. They tend to want to go out. And when you break that habit and you can't get a chance to catch up, that's what does these shows in. But now that people can watch them at their own time and their own pace, and not miss an episode, because you really don't have to miss an episode anymore. It gives you a chance to follow the story as you never could before. And and the fact that you're seeing all this passionate fan viewing is a testament to that. They're able to watch the story sort of as you would read a novel, at your own pace. You can stop on any page you want, and you can pick it up when you go back to it.
Well, it's refreshing to see stuff that doesn't fit a formula, that it doesn't wrap neatly up into 58 minutes or something like that, and where you can have bad guys as the main character. It's I got hooked on that stuff.
I got to tell you, my wife and I were lucky enough to be invited to the pilot screening of Breaking Bad when it first came out, and I had known Bryan Cranston from the Television Academy days. And I just remember seeing him outside and saying, you know, Brian, I'm going to go out on a limb, but you better get ready to win some Emmys, because this is a show that really, really works. And he was, I think a lot of the people who were involved in the show back then were wondering if that was the case, because here was a very dark character. But it was a wonderfully nuanced and intricate character. And Brian, you know, so brought Walter White to life that it's no wonder he's won several Emmys. It was no wonder that Breaking Bad won the Emmy this year. And I wouldn't be surprised if Bryan Cranston wins again next year for his work this year.
I am assuming that as a former chairman and CEO of the Academy, that you still get some pretty good seats there for events like that.
Well, you know, it's like the Chinese wall. Every year your seats move a little bit further back and a little to the side. But so far, so good. I'm not in the balcony yet.
Let's shift gears to JFK. Sure. This is a project that you started working on this a long time ago, and just kind of an idea that popped into your head.
Well, I am passionate about JFK, partly because my generation is passionate about JFK. We were the kids who heard about the assassination when we were at school, and for many people my age, this was the first time we ever saw an adult cry, and it had quite an impact on us. And so I've always been compelled by JFK for many reasons, but I wrote about him, as you mentioned, during Dark Skies. I set that series in the 60s and wound JFK in with the UFO story. But I think the reason JFK is so compelling to us, as you think about Ralph Waldo Emerson once wrote about Napoleon, and he was talking about him being no saint and he's no hero. But when he was able to write about Napoleon, he was able to write about a man who fulfilled his life to a full trajectory. And you could study the whole line of it, and you could know for better or worse what that man was all about. But the problem with JFK was that his bright trajectory ended in mid-passage. History just was abruptly cut off, and the myth-making began. But our minds are haunted by that hypothetical, by what might have been, and it's this giant perplexity of conditional clauses when you think about JFK. And so I literally, as you point out, have been thinking about this a long time. I got this idea for the book Surrounded by Enemies, What If Kennedy Survived Dallas, back in 2003, and I worked with it and then come back to it. And, you know, I have another career in film and television, and so I would go do those things and keep coming back to this idea. And I kind of woke up this year and said, with the 50th anniversary of the assassination coming up, I would either have to finish it or put it aside permanently. And there's some ideas that get in your head, and if you don't write them, you can't get them out of your head. So I figured I'd write it, and that's what I did.
As you note in some of your publicity material about the book in your website, other people have tackled similar projects or at least similar themes. The biggie on the block, of course, being Stephen King, but yours is different.
Well, it is. I think people have, because it's such a powerful what if, speculated about it in fiction before. Traditionally, what's come before has been that kind of sci-fi time travel thing. And there's numerous cases of people writing about people who go back in time to save President Kennedy's life. And that's really what Stephen King has done. He wrote a 900-some page book on the topic about this character going back in time. And he spends about 3 pages of his 900 talking about what might have happened afterward. I just decided for me that the bite of the apple I wanted to take was not the going back in time. I wanted to tell it like an actual story, reporting it as a reporter might report it, and talk about that alternative history, that alternate world where John Kennedy did survive Dallas. What would have happened then? And to me, that is the meat of the what if, and that's the one I wanted to tell.
Well, it is a novel, so I don't want to give the whole thing away, but I mean you can make some guesses for one thing based on the title.
Well, yes. Yeah, you can. That's no spoiler. One of the things that I decided to do that would be different and I think controversial with Surrounded by Enemies was simply to not put the rose-colored glasses on, which is what a lot of people want to do when they talk about what if Kennedy had lived. They look at it and say, well, you know, if he had lived, he would have done all these great things. We wouldn't have been in Vietnam. Civil rights would have happened, blah, you know, earlier, and blah, blah, blah. And they're acting, or rather discussing an alternative universe where Dallas never happened. For those things to have occurred, JFK would have just lived on and won a second term and gone on about his business. I decided to take the bite of the apple where they actually shoot at him in Dallas and he survives. So if you think about it, that's a pretty radical thing. On November 23rd, 1963, in that scenario, John Kennedy would have woken up in Washington, D.C. and realized that the day before he'd been targeted for execution in broad daylight on a public street before a global television audience. And under those circumstances, I think we'd all have to agree, life would not ping back to normal. That would have changed the game quite a bit. And so that's the story that I've tried to tell, the one where he would have realized that somebody wanted him dead, whether it was a lone gunman or a conspiracy, somebody wanted him dead. And I think the Kennedy brothers, John and Bobby, in my view, would have become really the first conspiracy theorists because they would have known what they were up against and the struggles that they were having. And they probably would have been very, very suspicious about who might have had the motive and opportunity to want John Kennedy dead.
Well, let's talk about that. And again, we'll talk about the historical underpinnings rather
Sure.
than the story that you tell in the novel. But what led you to the idea that they would know, the Kennedy brothers would know something was amiss here? This wasn't just a lone gunman acting a nutball acting on his own.
Well, I think that the Kennedy brothers were deeply involved in lots of issues where they were in conflict with people. I mean, there's the classic issues of the conflict with the Cubans, both pro-Castro and anti-Castro Cubans. There's the Cold War aspect of the Soviet Union. Those are sort of the external factors. Internally, Kennedy was in a serious beef with the CIA. He wanted to scatter them, break them up into 1,000 pieces and scatter them to the wind after the Bay of Pigs. And the CIA held no love for John Kennedy either. He had conflicts with the FBI, with J. Edgar Hoover. He had conflicts with his Joint Chiefs of Staff, who were notoriously disrespectful to him, treated him like he was someone to be lectured on many occasions. The Secret Service obviously would have failed in Dallas, and the question would be, well, if your job is to protect the president, you didn't do a very good job of it. So what does that mean? So there were lots, and then of course, organized crime. Bobby Kennedy, on behalf of his brother, was working to break up organized crime very, very aggressively during the Kennedy administration. And I think it's pretty clear that they wouldn't have been happy about that. So there were lots and lots of potential people who might have wished John Kennedy ill, and clearly did. I mean, there were people who were, you know, big business was worried about his financial policies, and Big Steel was worried about, you know, had been in a conflict with him the year before. There were Southerners who hated him over his racial policies. There were Big Oil hated him over wanting to get rid of the oil depletion allowance. I mean, in my book, at one point, when the Kennedys are trying to analyze this, John Kennedy, who was always one who had, even in a difficult situation, had a sense of humor, said, well, maybe the question we should be asking is who wouldn't want to have me dead at this point?
How would they know? Okay, they come back, it's the next day, it's November 23rd, they're in the White House, they talk about it, and I'm not giving too much away because you posted the video on your site, and I've encouraged our listeners to take a look at it, but that they're worried about who would be listening to them in the White House, so they go somewhere else to talk about it. But what would have been the procedure for them in a historical way to find out who was behind it? Who do they trust? They couldn't trust the FBI or CIA to investigate it. How would they proceed to get information to get the straight story?
Well, two ways primarily. There's the informal way of just running the basis of the people you know and the people you trust, and putting them out there to sort of hear what they can hear. But on a professional basis, let's not forget that John Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy were high-level officers of the U.S. government. John Kennedy was the president of the United States and certainly had resources that he could command. Bobby Kennedy was the attorney general of the United States. That is certainly a person who can command certain resources. Now, the question is, which resources do you trust? And one of the storylines that I think, you know, as your listeners will discover if they read this book, one of the things that these men would first have wanted to figure out was, well, who failed here? Even if we can think about the possible people who might want John Kennedy dead, somebody failed. Was it the Secret Service? Was it the FBI? Why? You'd want to get into the facts of the case, and there would be facts because there'd still, at least in this telling, be someone named Lee Harvey Oswald who had been arrested and was looking like he was at least part of the assassination attempt. So you'd have this entire mixture going on. But what I think it would be really particularly interesting on November 23rd and 24th, instead of a state funeral for John Kennedy, you'd be having a funeral for people who were killed in the attack, at least in my book. And you would also be saying, well, obviously, since security has failed, we need to be particularly concerned right now that we're in the middle of a coup. One of John Kennedy's most powerful associations that he talked to people about was the 7 days in May scenario. He had read that book. He was encouraging Hollywood to actually make the movie at the time because he felt that 7 days in May, which tells the story of a military coup against the president, he felt that that could happen, and it could happen to him because of his relationships.
Well, you read that into some of the statements he's made about the military-industrial complex, the power of these intelligence agencies. I mean, public statements that are often repeated now, that he knew that this was a threat, all the more timely when you look at the NSA and the revelations that are coming out now.
Absolutely true. And in fact, I think John Kennedy realized when he got into office very soon that he was riding a tiger. He came into office, and it wasn't 3 months later that he got embroiled in the Bay of Pigs, and that came about, that CIA-sponsored attack with using Cuban expatriates to reinvade their country. It failed miserably. Kennedy got set up by the CIA and the military to back it, and they put him in a corner hoping that he would commit the nation's military resources to it.
Yeah, but he never forgot that either. We're talking with Bryce Zabel, author of the new book, Surrounded by Enemies, a what-if story about the assassination or attempted assassination of JFK. We're talking with Bryce Zabel, who's written a new book, a novel called Surrounded by Enemies, about the what-ifs Had Kennedy survived an assassination attempt in Dallas? When we come back, we'll get into some of the possibilities. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Back with our guest, Bryce Zabel. Bryce, I remember having a brief conversation when Oliver Stone was on this program about how the story of JFK's assassination sort of gets jumbled together, and the people that don't want others to question the official explanation say, gosh, there's too many suspects in this conspiracy theory. It's the CIA, it's the FBI, it's the Joint Chiefs and the military industrial complex, it's the Cubans, it's the mob. Come on now, right. Pick one, you know, and they use that sort of to say it's ridiculous to cast doubt on the whole thing. But the fact is, all those interests had reasons to want to get rid of him.
Well, they did, and I'm not going to say that Oliver Stone's not right. I mean, some combination of that may very well be the truth. Fortunately, as a dramatist and a novelist here, I don't have to argue the definitive case, but I think Oliver Stone, the case that he's made anyway, is that there were lots of potential people who were players in this thing, and he's identified them, and I don't know why it would mean that just because you've identified potential players that discredits the whole thing. In fact, I have to say, you were talking earlier about it seems at this point most people would believe that it is a conspiracy or was a conspiracy. Certainly the public has felt that from the beginning. I mean, the polls showed from the beginning that the public didn't really buy the lone gunman. Currently, even as we speak now, it's around 60% and above that are in the conspiracy theory. But what I find interesting, George, and I wonder what your thoughts are on this. You know, there's a pushback, a currently underway pushback for the Oswald acted alone theory. We talked about Stephen King earlier. That's certainly what he believes. He writes an entire ending to his book where he believes that Oswald acted alone. Bill O'Reilly wrote a book basically stating the same thing. Benson Bugliosi, the prosecutor of Charles Manson, wrote a longer book than Stephen King. He wrote like a 1,200-page book that concluded Oswald acted alone. And I wonder what these guys are smoking, because the stuff that I'm reading, you know, I may not be the best read person on it, but I've read a lot, and I see so many facts and considerations that don't add up, that I think it's far more likely that this was an act of people coming together to create the situation than a single guy waking up and saying, I think I'll run down to my place of work and kill the president.
Well, I strongly agree, and I don't care how many pages these guys have in their books, they still have to ignore a whole bunch of stuff if they're going to say Oswald acted alone. They have to sidestep it, because you can't explain some of it. I've looked at the mob angle, because a lot of the mob guys who were involved in the plots to kill Castro, who were working with the CIA, they were from Las Vegas. They had interest in Las Vegas. So I've done some stories from this end. These guys had basically admitted to each other in private that they were involved with it. And, you know, maybe it's just a matter of them bragging about it, but they had pretty good reasons for wanting to get rid of them. The fact is, though, that the mob would not be able to do this alone, because if they did it alone without some help from somebody in the government, they would have been killed. They would have been taken out.
And that's my take. George, you're right. For people to dismiss the entire concept of a conspiracy because it would have involved multiple players, excuse me, let's take that apart for a second. We already know as a fact that the U.S. CIA was working with members of the mafia to try to kill Castro. I mean, that's fact. So that already crosses some of those groups and puts them in this assassination stew. I mean, it wouldn't be impossible for the very people that collaborated to try to kill Castro to take the object of their anger, John Kennedy, and pivot their plans toward him. That wouldn't have been a big stretch to me. I mean, you know, after spending years researching this myself, I kept wondering what I would do if I was in John Kennedy's shoes and had survived. I think that he would have to want to get to answers, but at the same time, he would he was no chicken. I mean, obviously, he went to Dallas when people were telling him it was a dangerous place to go, so he's certainly a brave guy, but I think he and his brother would have hunkered down a little bit and turned it, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, into a fortress for a while, and tried to figure out what they were going to do next, which is why, by the way, it's called Surrounded by Enemies, because that's how I think these two guys would have approached the scenario they would have faced post-Dallas.
Well, tell me this, without giving too much away, in your novel, do you have them, obviously starting their own investigation at some level.
Yes.
Would it have been public? Would they have been made that public, that we think this was a conspiracy of sorts and we're going after to try to find out who is involved?
Well, let me, I'll answer that. I think what the first part of it, I would say, is this, from the point of view of a novel, is the greatest unsolved murder mystery of the past century. And in a way, you've got JFK as your Sherlock Holmes and Bobby as your Watson. I mean, they're trying to solve the attempted assassination of the president. So, you know, I think that they would clearly have had motive and opportunity themselves to try to bring resolution to this. But to your particular point, what would their public policy have been? I think that's a really powerful point that you make, and I deal with that in great detail in the book, because I think that they would do what any, I would use, I guess, some of the same theories that they applied to the Cuban Missile Crisis. They studied the situation. They tried to come up with unusual ways to deal with it. They tried to be flexible. And I think the Kennedy brothers and the inner circle at the White House, when looking at the situation post-Dallas, would have realized they had some very bad options. They were faced with not a lot of good options, and they would have tried to figure out what the best one was. And the best one, I do not believe, would have been, let's go on TV and accuse people of running a conspiracy to kill the president. I think that they would have tried to handle the situation in a way that tamped down some of those, the emotions of that moment, the white-hot emotions, and tried to get some facts before they tried to act.
Well, look, again, looking at not giving away what you do in the book, but the facts are that John F. Kennedy had a secret life. He had a lot of secrets and scandal in his life. We've learned about it since then. But in that time, if the press corps knew about his private life, they weren't reporting that stuff.
No.
You give it away sort of in the film, in the video that we posted, that scandal erupts. And you even have the covers of these fictional magazines where the secret life of JFK is exposed. Is that part of a plot that somebody, or
well,
how much do you want to say about that?
I'm not trying to. The video I really like, and I think it's a powerful statement. It kind of goes with the book. I don't think I would simply tell anyone who's listening tonight that the book is its own ride. It's its own experience, and the fact that something you might know. Some of the ways that it goes or doesn't go won't spoil that ride. You did touch on something I just wanted to highlight. One of the great things about an ebook these days is its ability to bring graphics to the forefront. And Linda Carr, who did the graphics for us, worked with me to create five faux magazine covers from the time period, this alternative time period. And they really do tell their own separate story about the evolution of it. But one of them that you're pointing out right now is the one that is an investigative magazine that puts out a story called The Secret Life of the President, which does get into the secret life of his medical condition and some of these women and that kind of situation. Because I think it's pretty interesting to speculate that whoever tried to take John Kennedy out on the streets of Dallas was using brute force. Those were gunshots being fired to physically murder him and decapitate the head of the government on those streets. But if they'd missed, John Kennedy would have been able to put more security around himself and certainly would have taken security much more seriously than he obviously did, even going to Dallas. And it would have made him harder and harder to get to as a physical person. But what John Kennedy had done, I believe, is give some of his enemies the very weapon to take him down with. And that was his behavior, was incautious, to say the least, when it comes to particularly women. And you know, there are there are different ways to assassinate somebody. There's physical assassination, and there's character assassination. And when you're the political leader of a country, and you leave yourself open to people, you know, as you said, the media may not have hopped forward in our timeline to expose John Kennedy's private life when they knew about it. The difference would have been in the white hot atmosphere that our country would have been facing after an assassination attempt. Investigations would have been launched to try to find out what had actually happened, what had transpired. It wouldn't just be the Kennedys looking into it. Congress would have wanted to get into it. There'd have been a trial potentially of Lee Harvey Oswald and various other things. And the more you look under these rocks, the more you're apt to find some of the things that you don't have to look away from anymore, because now it's perceived in a different way.
Well, you mentioned about a trial of Lee Harvey Oswald, which is an interesting possibility. I mean, I can see the Kennedys, one of the first things they would want to do is secure that guy, make sure that he's protected the next day, and make sure that he's protected by people they could trust.
Well, but again, the limits of power are kind of an interesting theme that I try to explore here. John Kennedy may have been president, but that doesn't mean everybody respected his authority, or else they wouldn't have, you know, the Joint Chiefs wouldn't have done some of the things they did, and obviously the CIA wasn't very respectful of his authority. And let's face it, Lee Harvey Oswald, had he not been killed by Jack Ruby, and would have been facing a potential trial, would have been facing a trial in Texas, where the reach of the federal government would have been not as strong, and things could have gotten pretty messed up, and because it's my novel, that's what happened. Things do get pretty messed up.
Back to the scandals that could have come out about JFK. I mean, he handed this to his enemies, and I don't exactly know for historical certainty what kind of file J. Edgar Hoover had on the Kennedys, but I know that he gathered information. I don't know that he ever threatened them with it, but they must have known that he had it. It would have been pretty tough for them to go after Hoover or fire Hoover for...
Absolutely. Well, he did threaten them with it, and they did know that he had it. He made one of the reasons the only reason, frankly, that J. Edgar Hoover was kept on in the Kennedy administration is that he did have these files on John Kennedy's behavior, and he told John Kennedy and often told his brother Bobby that he had this information. Hoover loved to blackmail people. The Kennedys weren't the only ones that he did that to, and the Kennedys had been under surveillance by Hoover for years, and Hoover had amassed quite a file on them.
Would it have made sense for them to fire him?
Well, I think what you have to understand is no. I mean, in our timeline, it didn't make any sense for them to fire Hoover. In a timeline that I'm speculating about, I'm not saying they fire Hoover or don't fire Hoover, I guess, at this point. But what I'm arguing is that the conditions would have changed dramatically on the ground, if you will, and that Hoover would have been someone who was in charge of an investigation who clearly would have been seen as not being as a active in bringing the facts to bear as he could have been, and Hoover would have done things his own way. By the way, Hoover. Let me just back up one second. What compelled me about Surrounded by Enemies more than anything is the idea that the drip, drip, drip of scandal and revelation that we've experienced in our timeline over John Kennedy over the last really it came out. Over the first 40 years after his assassination, and now it's almost accepted, but it was a drip, 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 and of scandal. If it had happened in a much more compressed timeline, things could have gone very awry for the president very quickly. And I think many people have thought over the years, and historians have said this, I'm not talking about alternate history people like myself, I'm talking about historians, have reached kind of a consensus that John Kennedy was a headline away from disaster, and many of them have speculated that in a second term he might have had to face the music, if you will, for this behavior. And so Surrounded by Enemies is trying to take that potential reality and propel it forward by virtue of the assassination survival. I don't think it's a stretch at all that things could have, these plates could have spun out of control, and that would have put the Kennedy brothers in conflict with multiple people, and J. Edgar Hoover would have been at the front of the line.
Well, you look at what happened to President Clinton and the trouble he right. got into and the impeachment move. I mean, certainly, if you look at the sordid history that's been asserted about John F. Kennedy, there was even more. There was a lot more.
I mean, Bill Clinton looks kind of lame in comparison. I mean, John Kennedy made it part of his lifestyle, but it was more than that. I don't think people... I think part of the reason Clinton survived his impeachment was that a lot of people thought it just didn't amount to anything. It wasn't a chronic thing that was undermining his time in office. But the Secret Service, who worked with John Kennedy, took a dimmer view. They were witnessing on a regular basis people enabling and even procuring for John Kennedy, and women who were being brought in to spend time with the president. The Secret Service was not being allowed to, say, check their purses. I mean, what they could have had hypodermic needles with poison. They could have had cameras for blackmail. They could have had weapons, and they weren't being checked properly. Well, that actually puts the nation at risk. To have a chief executive that could be blackmailed is not a good thing. To have a chief executive that could be killed by a Soviet spy, for example, during the Cold War would have been a terrible thing. So
you're something of an historian on these kinds of things, and your Hollywood is your bailiwick.
Sure.
What about the stories that Bobby and or John Kennedy told things to Marilyn Monroe about UFOs?
Well, I'll get to that in a second. Let me back up on JFK and Marilyn Monroe. One of the reasons you said I've been working on this for a while, my backstory is that my mentor in Hollywood was someone who, it was his last television series he worked on. It was the first television series I worked on. And he knew John Kennedy, and he knew the Rat Pack, and he had partied with these guys, and he told me stories. And those stories included Marilyn Monroe being at parties where John Kennedy and Marilyn Monroe were at these parties. And so clearly I was aware of that relationship from first-hand accounts for a while. And so that part I'm very confident of. I mean, I don't think anyone doubts that there was a relationship with Marilyn anymore, and I've known that for a while. The UFO angle certainly was something that I made a lot of use of in Dark Skies. When you get to Kennedy and UFOs, it's definitely something that you're talking about that is less nailed down. I mean, it's
more speculative.
Yeah. I was happy to use it in Dark Skies and make a meal out of it. But I will tell you this: when we did Dark Skies in the 90s, nobody was talking about JFK and UFOs. We basically took the two creator Brent Friedman and I took the two big conspiracy theories of that time, JFK and UFOs, and put them in the Atom Collider and came out with Dark Skies. We had not read anything about JFK and UFOs. Now, in the years since then, we read about it, and people speculated about it, and there are some documents that purport to be about it, but the validity of those documents, I'm sure you've looked into them as well. You may have your own opinions.
I think they all got the idea from you. That's where I think it
came
from.
Well, they might. And so I'm always skeptical of that. I mean, whether JFK – well, let me put it this way. I think it's possible that JFK might have known about the UFO situation. I happen to believe that the UFO situation is a real situation, and it's been real for a while, and it was certainly real during the Kennedy presidency.
Bryce, I'm going to have to stop you there because that song is telling us we need to take a break. We'll be back with more of our discussion of Surrounded by Enemies, Bryce Abel's new book, right after this on Coast to Coast AM.